The set text was prepared by David Price, CCX074 at Coventry. Ack. Uck. From the 1888 Castle and Company edition. From London to Land's End. Sir, I find so much left to speak of, and so many things to say in every part of England, that my journey cannot be barren of intelligence which way soever I turn. No, though I were to oblige myself to say nothing of anything that had been spoken of before. I intended once to have gone due west this journey, but then I should have been obliged to crowd my observations so close to Brighampton Court, Windsor, Blenheim, Oxford, the Bath and Bristol all into one letter. All those remarkable places lying in a line, as it were, in one point of the compass, as to have made my letter too long, or my observations too light and superficial, as others have done before me. This letter will divide the weighty task, and consequently make it sit lighter on the memory, be pleasanter to the reader, and make my progress the more regular. I shall therefore take in Hampton Court and Windsor in this journey, the first at my setting out, and the last at my return, and the rest as their situation demands. As I came down from Kingston, in my last circuit, by the south bank of the Thames, on the Surrey side of the river, so I go up to Hampton Court now on the north bank, and on the Middlesex side, which I mention, because, as the sides of the country bordering on the river lie parallel, so the beauty of the country, the pleasant situations, the glory of innumerable fine buildings, noblemen's and gentlemen's houses, and citizens' retreats, are so equally matched to what I had described on the other side, that one knows not which to give the preference to. But as I must speak of them again, when I come to write of the county of Middlesex, which I have now purposely omitted, so I pass them over here, except the palace of Hampton only, which I mentioned in Middlesex, for the reasons above. Hampton Court lies on the north bank of the River Thames, about 2 small miles from Kingston, and on the road from Staines to Kingston Bridge, so that the road straightening the parks a little, they were obliged to part the parks, and leave the paddock and the great park part on the other side the road, a testimony of that just regard that the kings of England always had, and still have, to the common good, and to the service of the country, that they would not interrupt the course of the road, or cause the poor people to go out of the way of their business to or from the markets and fairs, for any pleasure of their own whatsoever. The palace of Hampton Court was first founded and built from the ground by that great statesman, and favorite of King Henry VIII, Cardinal Wolsey, and if it be a just observation anywhere, as is made from the situation of the old abbeys and monasteries, the clergy were excellent judges of the beauty and pleasantness of the country, and chose always to plant in the best. I say, if it was a just observation in any case, it was in this. For if there be a situation on the whole river between Staines Bridge and Windsor Bridge pleasanter than another, it is this of Hampton, close to the river, yet not offended by the rising of its waters in floods or storms, near to the reflux of the tides, but not quite so near as to be affected with any foulness of the water which the flowing of the tides generally is the occasion of. The gardens extend almost to the bank of the river, yet are never overflowed, nor are there any marshes on either side the river to make the waters stagnate, or the air unwholesome on that account. The river is high enough to be navigable, and low enough to be a little pleasantly rapid, so that the stream looks always cheerful, not slow and sleeping, like a pond. This keeps the waters always clear and clean, the bottom in view, the fish playing and in sight, and, in a word, it has everything that can make an inland, or, as I may call it, a country, river pleasant and agreeable. I shall sing you no songs here of the river in the first person of a water nymph, a goddess, and I know not what, according to the humor of the ancient poets. I shall talk nothing of the marriage of old Isis, the male river, with the beautiful Thame, the female river, a whimsy as simple as the subject was empty, but I shall speak of the river as occasion presents, as it really is made glorious by the splendor of its shores, gilded with noble palaces, strong fortifications, large hospitals, and public buildings, with the greatest bridge, and the greatest city in the world, made famous by the opulence of its merchants, the increase and extensiveness of its commerce, by its invincible navies, and by the innumerable fleets of ships sailing upon it to and from all parts of the world. As I meet with the river upwards in my travels through the inland country, I shall speak of it, as it is the channel for conveying an infinite quantity of provisions from remote counties to London, and enriching all the counties again that lie near it by the return of wealth and trade from the city. And in describing these things I expect both to inform, and divert my readers, and speak in a more masculine manner, more to the dignity of the subject, and also more to their satisfaction, than I could do any other way. There is little more to be said of the Thames relating to Hampton Court, than that it adds by its neighborhood to the pleasure of the situation. For as to passing by water to and from London, though in summer it is exceeding pleasant, yet the passage is a little too long to make it easy to the ladies, especially to be crowded up in the small boats which usually go upon the Thames for pleasure. The prince and princess, indeed, I remember came once down by water upon the occasion of her royal highness's being great with child, a nearer time so near, that she was delivered within 2 or 3 days after. But this passage being in the royal barges, with strength of oars, and the day exceeding fine, the passage, I say, was made very pleasant, and still the more so for being short. Again, this passage is all the way with the stream, whereas in the common passage upwards great part of the way is against the stream, which is slow and heavy. But be the going and coming how it will by water, it is an exceeding pleasant passage by land, whether we go by the Surrey side, or the Middlesex side of the water, of which I shall say more in its place. The situation of Hampton Court being thus mentioned, and its founder, it is to be mentioned next, that it fell to the crown in the forfeiture of His Eminence the Cardinal, when the king seized his effects and estate, by which this and Whitehall, another house of his own building also, came to King Henry VIII. Two palaces fit for the kings of England, erected by one cardinal, are standing monuments of the excessive pride as well as the immense wealth of that prelate, who knew no bounds of his insolence and ambition till he was overthrown at once by the displeasure of his master. Whoever knew Hampton Court before it was begun to be rebuilt, or altered, by the late King William, must acknowledge it was a very complete palace before, and fit for a king. And though it might not, according to the modern method of building or of gardening, pass for a thing exquisitely fine, yet it had this remaining to itself, and perhaps peculiar namely, that it showed a situation exceedingly capable of improvement, and of being made one of the most delightful palaces in Europe. This Her Majesty Queen Mary was so sensible of, that, while the king had ordered the pulling down the old apartments, and building it up in that most beautiful form which we see them now appear in, Her Majesty, impatient of enjoying so agreeable a retreat, fixed upon a building formerly made use of chiefly for landing from the river, and therefore called the Water Galley, and here, as if she had been conscious that she had but a few years to enjoy it, she ordered all the little neat curious things to be done which suited her own conveniences, and made it the pleasantest little thing within doors that could possibly be made, though its situation being such as it could not be allowed to stand after the great building was finished, we now see no remains of it. The queen had here her gallery of beauties, being the pictures at full length of the principal ladies attending upon Her Majesty, or who were frequently in her retinue. And this was the more beautiful sight, because the originals were all in being, and often to be compared with their pictures. Her Majesty had here a fine apartment, with a set of lodgings for her private retreat only, but most exquisitely furnished, particularly a fine chintz bed, then a great curiosity, another of her own work while in Holland, very magnificent, and several others, And here was also Her Majesty's fine collection of delftware, which indeed was very large and fine. And here was also a vast stock of fine chinaware, the like whereof was not then to be seen in England. The long gallery, as above, was filled with this china, and every other place where it could be placed with advantage. The queen had here also a small bathing room, made very fine, suited either to hot or cold bathing, as the season should invite. Also a dairy, with all its conveniences, in which Her Majesty took great delight. All these things were finished with expedition, that here their majesties might repose, while they saw the main building go forward. While this was doing, the gardens were laid out, the plan of them devised by the king himself, and especially the amendments and alterations were made by the king, or the queen's particular special command, or by both, for their majesties agreed so well in their fancy, and had both, so good judgment in the just proportions of things, which are the principal beauties of a garden, that it may be said they both ordered everything that was done. Here the fine parcel of limes which form the semicircle on the south front of the house by the iron gates, looking into the park, were by the dexterous hand of the head gardener removed, after some of them had been almost 30 years planted in other places, though not far off. I know the King of France in the decoration of the gardens of Versailles had oaks removed, which by their dimensions, must have been above 100 years old, and yet were taken up with so much art, and by the strength of such engines, by which such a monstrous quantity of earth was raised with them, that the trees could not feel their remove, that is to say, their growth was not at all hindered. This, I confess, makes the wonder much the less in those trees at Hampton Court Gardens, but the performance was not the less difficult or nice, however, in these, and they thrive perfectly well. While the gardens were thus laid out, the king also directed the laying the pipes for the fountains and jet d'eau, and particularly the dimensions of them, and what quantity of water they should cast up, and increased the number of them after the first design. The ground on the side of the other front has received some alteration since the taking down the water galley, but not that part immediately next to lodgings. The orange trees and fine Dutch bays are placed within the arches of the building under the first floor, so that the lower part of the house was all one as a greenhouse for some time. Here stand advanced, on two pedestals of stone, two marble vases or flower pots of most exquisite workmanship, the one done by an Englishman, and the other by a German. It is hard to say which is the best performance, though the doing of it was a kind of trial of skill between them, but it gives us room, without any partiality, to say they were both masters of their art. The parter on that side descends from the terrace walk by steps, and on the left a terrace goes down to the water side, from which the garden on the eastward front is overlooked, and gives a most pleasant prospect. The fine scrolls and border of these gardens were at first edged with box, but on the queen's disliking the smell those edgings were taken up, but have since been planted again at least, in many places nothing making so fair and regular an edging as box, or is so soon brought to its perfection. On the north side of the house, where the garden seemed to want screening from the weather, or the view of the chapel, and some part of the old building required to be covered from the eye, the vacant ground, which was large, is very happily cast into a wilderness, with a labyrinth and espaliers so high, that they effectually take off all that part of the old building which would have been offensive to the sight. This labyrinth and wilderness is not only well designed, and completely finished, but is perfectly well kept, and the espaliers filled exactly at bottom, to the very ground, and are led up to proportioned heights on the top, so that nothing of that kind can be more beautiful. The house itself is every way answerable on the outside to the beautiful prospect, and the two fronts are the largest, and, beyond comparison, the finest of the kind in England. The great stairs go up from the second court of the palace on the right hand, and lead you to the south prospect. I hinted in my last, that King William brought into England the love of fine paintings as well as that of fine gardens, and you have an example of it in the cartoons, as they are called, being five pieces of such paintings as, if you will believe, men of nice judgment and great traveling, are not to be matched in Europe. The stories are known, but especially two of them, viz. That of St. Paul preaching on Mars Hill to the self-wise Athenians, and that of St. Peter passing sentence of death on Ananias. I say, these two strike the mind with the utmost surprise. The passions are so drawn to the life, astonishment, terror, and death in the face of Ananias, zeal and a sacred fire in the eyes of the blessed apostle, fright and surprise upon the countenances of the beholders in the peace of Ananias. All these describe themselves so naturally, that you cannot but seem to discover something of the like passions, even in seeing them. In the other there is the boldness and courage with which St. Paul undertook to talk to a set of men who, he knew, despised all the world, as thinking themselves able to teach them anything. In the audience there is anticipating pride and conceit in some, a smile or fleer of contempt in others, but a kind of sensible conviction, though crushed in its beginning, on the faces of the rest, and altogether appear confounded, but have little to say, and know nothing at all of it. They gravely put him off to hear him another time. All these are seen here in the very dress of the face, that is, the very countenances which they hold, while they listen to the new doctrine which the apostle preached to a people at that time ignorant of it. The other of the cartoons are exceeding fine, but I mention these as the particular two which are most lively, which strike the fancy the soonest at first view. It is reported, but with what truth I know not, that the late French king offered 100,000 louis d'or for these pictures. But this, I say, is but a report. The king brought a great many other fine pieces to England, and with them the love of fine paintings so universally spread itself among the nobility and persons of figure all over the kingdom, that it is incredible what collections have been made by English gentlemen since that time, and how all Europe has been rummaged, as we may say, for pictures to bring over hither, where for 20 years they yielded the purchasers, such as collected them for sale, immense profit. But the rates are abated since that, and we begin to be glutted with the copies and frauds of the Dutch and Flemish painters who have imposed grossly upon us. But to return to the palace of Hampton Court. Queen Mary lived not to see it completely finished, and her death, with the other difficulties of that reign. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.